Okay. Good. So, Sefer Mishnah. Now, he gives here a rather long hakdama, dealing with one point, till he gets on to the second point. He starts with a pasuk in Mishlei, which Chazal darshin that applies to Sahara. The pasuk has a pshat in its own right, and it needs pshat in its own right, and then the Chazal who darshin as regards the Sahara. The Sefer Mishlei, it says, Imroav son acha chileu lechem, if your enemy is hungry, then feed him bread. V'motza hashkeu mayim, and if you find him, give him water. Why? Because in that way you're pouring coals, burning coals on his head. Hashem yisham loch, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will pay you for it. That's the pasuk in Mishlei. So the first thing is he explains the pasuk as it says, and the pshat that he's saying is fairly it's fairly in line with what the other Rishonim learn over there, and he says Imrov Sanecha ki it says Kirachmon Shlomo Melech Ratzolayma Kimrov Sanecha. That if, let's say, your enemy is hungry, so don't stop from feeding him. It's counterintuitive. There's a mistake in the word. It should be v'mtsomei hashkeim mayim instead of v'motzai. And this is just a principal mistake here. Ki achmonis hefech ha'oyev. Because when he's merachim on him, he becomes tied to him, and the oyev is misnagrelov. Let's talk first about this a second. So Shlomo Melech is giving us advice over here that a person should treat his enemies well and so on, and they will reciprocate. The truth is, you need to be, I guess, a little more nuanced in terms of what the pasuk is talking about. Which case is the pasuk talking about? The pasuk using the word sonacha, which I think is very significant. Let's take other cases. The being good to your sone doesn't work well if he's out, if he's an aggressive person who's out to sort of dominate you, and your actions are seen as weakness, appeasement, and so on. That's not going to work over there. That will, if anything, make the situation much worse. The person will feel he's getting exactly what he wants. That relationship is not exactly sone. But the word in Lashon Kodesh, in English, the word enemy covers kind of a large swath of people that are fighting me. In Lashon Kodesh, it's a little more specific. So a type of a case where, like, Russia is looking to gobble up some land, then giving him something, it may or may not be the smart thing to do. It certainly does not fit into this category, because the issue is they want to dominate, and if they see a sign of weakness, they go for it. So that's not going to work. Sometimes, if the person in a human situation, if the person is sort of put off, he feels bad that you're better than him. Let's give an example. Let's take two brothers where one brother feels the other one has better luck than he has in terms of, let's say parnasa, and if that creates an antagonism. If you try to help the other person, it's interpreted as showing your superiority. and the person actually would be, I don't want to take a nickel from you, I don't need it, so forth. So in those life situations, this is not a very productive mahalach. But those are not really sonim. Those are not what the Torah calls sonim. Sonim would be the following situation. Let's say the enmity is caused by a sense that it is him on the cheshbon of me, that he is competing with me and taking away, or possibly taking away, that which I would like to have for myself. Or he will stifle my business, things of that nature, where the other person feels that you're out to get him, where you sort of are, the enmity is created by a sense that you're competing for something. So over there, where you turn around and help the other person, so there, it's a very, very different sense of things. Now, again, you have to always be very careful nuances. Let's say in a case where there's some sort of competition, and you're helping the other person by giving you money, he might interpret it as, yeah, you're so rich that you're showing off that you can give me money. Giving the other person business opportunities, or sort of implying, giving him something that fulfills his needs, really is going to be the hetimtza that the pasuk is talking about. So, and the point of it is, and he says, kerachmanis hefechoyev, kasher merachlam is kasher.
So
he says over here, you're destroying the sone because you are drying out the land or the swamp upon which the enmity could grow. So in effect, you're leaving the person, but you're destroying the enemy. A very famous, the kind of anecdote they say over from Davar Menel, where he was a minister, he was a finance minister, and he was walking the street with the king, and somebody called him some dirty name or whatever it was. I'm not sure if he wasn't popular because he was Jewish or because he was a finance minister, or both. But the king told him, cut that evil tongue out. He told Abarbanel, so he said, yes, definitely will do. A few months later, the king happens to see that person. He sees he's talking, his tongue hasn't been cut out, and so on. And he told Abarbanel, I understand, I gave you a directive that cut that evil tongue out. He said, well, I did. I cut out his evil tongue. He no longer, I helped him and did for him and so on, and he no longer speaks bad of me because it's so basically I've gotten rid of the evil tongue by helping the person. So the pasuk says that the Maral says you're pouring coals on his head means you are destroying him as an enemy. You're totally turning to ashes any reason he would have to go out against you.
And
he says also, So he says, Akash Baruch Hu helps him, first of all, because he has Midas Rachmanis, and that's a Midah Toiv. But there's another Nekuda here. He says, because this person went mi hefech el hefech. Hefech el hefech means, in a certain sense, it's the ultimate bechira of a person. When a person is doing something in line with what's natural, and what's in his nature to do. So that's sort of expected, and so we can tweak it a little bit and be better at it and so on. But the exercise of Bechira is when I can turn around to the person who's my enemy and help him. So that's why there's a special schar from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so that's the pshat, the pasuk. Now he says, "Sam v'amforshim pirshu zeh, ki kasha temach lo yiselechem mizbayish leher lefa keter v'sisa imoy." It's a tactical type of a ploy. In other words, listen, if you're going to feed the person, he's going to be very embarrassed to do to you something, because I was going to say, where's your car set up, and so on and so forth. So he says he doesn't think that that's quite right. The metaphor the pasuk uses, that it's like pouring hot coals on his head, means you destroy him. It's not a preventive. Listen, you've boxed the guy into a corner. How could it do this to you if you've been so and so and so forth? Meseches Megillah Perek Kama Muchach de Besoyni Rasha Gomer Medaber. Shekach Omer Shom Ma Rasa Esther Shezim Na Homer Lesuda Vokomer Shom Nechsev Im Rav Sanecha Echilei Lechem Vim Tzomei Hu Ashkei Umayim Ki Gochom Tochoyt Aroyshe Vashem Yishalmucha Altik Yishalmuch Ali Hashem Egalach. So now he has another Knech, and this is more of a I guess, I don't say the word mystical, but it's more of an abstract knech. The first two pshatim is, the first one is that you will emotionally remove the enmity from the person. The second pshat is, it's tactically very, very useful, because if you put a person in a bind that he owes you one, he can't turn against you. Now he says there's another pshat, and this has to do with what it says by Haman and Esther, that she went and fed him based on pasuk. Well, the fiza timer shall dava ki kasha oyev mekala parnasim cha he efsa shia misnagel cha ki kva hisbaya ki amekabul min ache nichnas tachas asho mekabul mimeno. Well, the fika bazer shuhu mekabul mimcha atachoy zikhon reishe. So it goes like this, and this is, it's easier to explain on a ruchnistic level, not easy at all to explain on a practical level. Maybe it doesn't have one. Just like, for instance, let's give an example. If I have a large pipe, and from that smaller pipes branch out, and from that still smaller pipes branch out, I will always, if I shut off a higher level of pipe, it will automatically affect all the lower ones. The flow goes from high to low, and therefore it's something that is the place, let's call it the master switch, always lies above the other one. So let's take a food chain or a manufacturing chain where such and such a company gives me the business for the parts, and I give the business to someone else for the metal and so on. So there's a very clear chain of who's getting from who and who's a balabas over the other one. So in the more abstract/mystical sense, someone who is yoinik his chiyus from me can't possibly turn against me, because then if he bites the hand that feeds him, he's not being fed anymore. So he needs to hold on to that which is feeding him. That's the teva dvarim. So it's more, I guess, sort of an abstract thing, that the Seder HaOlam is whatever, if something is dependent on something else, then it is a product of it. And it can't actually turn against it. It can make noises, but it can't turn against it. So Let's give an example. Let's say in a country like England, and I'm talking in theory, where everything is by appointment from Her Majesty, so nobody can actually go against Her Majesty. If they can, if they do, then they're not working for Her Majesty. By definition, they're not, whatever it is they're supposed to be, they're not, because the all of the government is, you know, by appointment of Her Majesty. It, by the way, I guess as a side remark, but it's important to bear in mind, it is one of the issues in Eretz Yisrael, the real issues with Rabbanut. It's a fundamentally flawed institution and doesn't have any logical solution, because there are two masters. For anyone who's a Rav working for the government, is he working for the government in the capacity of a Rav, or is working for God as an ambassador to the government? If it is the former, which the government certainly feels like that, the government feels it is sovereign, then just as if it's unthinkable that a minister of the Treasury would say the government's decision about where to allocate money is crazy and it's for the birds, and I'm going to do what I think is right, that person would be immediately out of a job. Because at the end of the day, he's entitled to his opinions, and he may even voice them in certain forms, but he can't countermand the government's decisions, and he can't even be public about it. His choice is to resign. So when somebody is working as a Rav for the Israeli government, well, can he countermand Israeli law or not? It does no way to call him a government official and to say that he can, however, override the government. It's an absolute contradiction in definition. So now you have a group of people nominally serving as Rabbanim, and they're supposed to be telling you what the halach is and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, and instead he's beholden to the government, to whatever the Israeli government decided, whatever Zayek Knesset decided, and that's what he's supposed to, that's what he's supposed to do and act upon and support. It's something that's an impossibility. So he no longer is telling you what he thinks HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. He's basically telling you, you know, he's a government official. That's a side point about it. But if a person takes his sone, like Haman, and he's machil him, then he is sort of making Haman's life force, he's routing Haman's life force through his own metzias. If he's routing Haman's life force through his own metzias, then all it takes to shut off is finding the right location, and that's it. It's you know, Haman can't, you know, this, it's, I guess it's a mystical thing, but we understand the sense that it makes. So the...
I mean, on a business thing, that's why, on a much deeper level, you know, if you go to someone and they give you like a business kind of lunch,
right?
They kind of coin you with that, Lafitas kind of swara.
Correct. Or, yeah. Let's take something more subtle. People who are psychologically in tune and assured about it, if they're the figure whose approval you need to thrive, you make use of it. So if I know, let's say I'm doing a business deal with you, and I know your weakness is you want to be considered to be very smart and astute. So if I come and I tell you I've got this very complex, sophisticated business deal, and it's only somebody as bright as you that's going to understand it, and I start explaining it to you, and I say, you know, I wasn't mistaken. I can see in your eyes that you're hopping the principle of it, and I think you're the first person. Man, you know, if the person I'm dealing with has that weakness, and I have that cynicism, then you know, it's not like I sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. I can sell you the Brooklyn Bridge in China. You know, it's because I found out what you need, where your chias is, and I've given it to you. I've become your mechayev. And this is one of the reasons why there's a kapeda. You don't take from goyim money for Jewish things, and this is one of the issues they deal with. You know, when it comes to taking all sorts of socialist government, you know, payments like welfare of different types, Medicaid and so on. So there's different aterim, but Chazal say be voish ktsirim to shabarna, that we're sort of giving them life. In a certain sense, we're beholden. There's a famous story in Eretz Yisrael where Weizmann was there for a visit, and he wanted that all the educational institutions should be under the central Zionist movement's auspices. And he spoke to a group of Haredi Rabbanim, and he said, I would like to support all of your institutions 100%, and I give you my word of honor that I will not dictate educational policy to you. And one of the Rabbanim of Werner, I think, from Tiberias, said, Dr. Weizmann, if you give us our budget, you're not going to dictate to us. We're going to come ask you. You know, when you're being yonic from some place, you can't, by definition, you can't cut yourself away from the place. So exactly how it is that with one meal, you're kind of humming, whatever, that's already some mystical imaginative. But the principle of it is that if you're yonik, and that's why there was such a famous Gemara of Reb Chiya and Reb Chista, I think it was, how they would perpetuate Torah in Kali Yisrael. He said, I would bring back Torah to my pilpul. And he said, I would go and capture deer, and I would sow flax and make nets out of it and capture deer and write Sefer Torah and sell the meat and so on. And everybody speaks about, like, why does he have to go through such a complex procedure? And the answer, and one of the answers they give is, he wanted to have Torah come from a very pure source. And if the funding is coming from a place that's less than good, then the whole structure is really just an offshoot of that, which is its life source. So once the Oyev is the one who gets the parnasa from you, he can be misnagged to you. So in a much deeper way, this is much deeper than the first case. When you're supporting something else, you're destroying it. You're destroying it as an independent entity. You're destroying it as a dove of Nazi can be misnagged to you. Smart companies know that when you have a product that's very competitive to your product, you can fight it, sort of push the person against the wall and so on, or you can just buy it out and make it part of your product, and then it'll work out that they don't compete. They'll complement each other, but you're not going to let it compete, obviously. V'Hashem yishalmecha, what's the underpasik? Kakadosh Baruch Hashem aroitze b'shumis nagdus yashlim oisei v'yodcha. U'kachu yaze v'sayi alze. So he says, being that HaKadosh Baruch Hu likes that process, being that process of sort of organizing things in a way that they're not in conflict with each other sits well with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intention for the Bria, there will be a lot of Sefer Shemayim for this. So any way of having the feeding the Sone, whatever point it is, or whatever level of it, it's part of the Tachas HaBriya. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants a frictionless world, and b'meila, this will all go for the good. Okay, that's the pasuk. That has nothing to do with the Yetzer Hara. This is just the pasuk as it stands, as it speaks about the Sone and so on. Now he says, the Gemara Perek HaChalil Dorish HaKos VaYetzer Hara Shusone VaYevada. So here he says we're talking about the Yetzer Hara. called him a Sonny, we'll explain later why that is. The Oma, Im Rov Sanacha, Sheitzahara Mises Oisai, Ella Ra, Hachileu Lechem Shalteira, Vim Tsomehu Hashkeu Mayim. Now, let's talk a little bit about this. He's going to go into different types of Yetzer, but let's look a bit outside first about the Etzem plan. The person, what does it mean he's feeding his Yetzirah? So let's take one pshat, the Goyen's pshat on the Pasuk. It's not quite where he's going, that the morale means, but I think it's a good stepping stone. The Goyen says on this pasuk, he says he brings the same chazal that he's going to bring in pogamuchom and nuvel zeh mashcheh beisemedish. It says that if Yitzhara it bumped into you, so to speak, take him to the beisemedish. In evenun in muach bebalzim ispoitzitz. Then it's the next pasuk. So he says v'hainu im yifka b'chom inuvel shu yitzahara v'roi tzeh lahatois oisum ha'teira shalit tulmoit klal mashchei beis ha'medrish. What does that mean? Ki im ha'odam yasul lumoit tekev l'shema lo yaniach loy. If a person wants to the Gemara is telling us the following. You have a desire for something. Now, if you try to go to the Beis Medrash and repress that desire, it's not going to work. So if a person has a tremendous desire, let's say to be famous and make a big name and to be, I don't know, very wealthy or world-renowned or whatever it is, if you say, no, I'm going to sit and learn Torah and everything else avel avolim, it's not going to be a successful transition. But if you say to yourself, you know, the truly famous people are those who sit in Beis Medrash, and they stay around for an eternity, and everybody knows them, and so on and so forth, then you have a fighting chance. So Mashcheh Yisrael means take the Yetzirah that you have, and, you know, take it along to the Beis Medrash. That's the way the Goyen says up here. I think he means a little bit more of a sophisticated, I think he means something a little more than morale. Morale means to say the same kochos hanefesh that a person has outside, they will find their sipuk, they're going to find their enjoyment in the Beis Medrash. So somebody who likes the tumult, is tumbling and learning, somebody's excited. Learning gives the person a certain, the right word is high, fulfillment. You feel good about it. So what I'm doing is I'm feeding the same kochos hanefesh that the Yetzirah was feeding, but I'm feeding with Torah. And b'meila, what happens is her melt. But let's give an example. I guess it's a little bit maybe crude.
Have enough, Jan?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I'm preempting, but if you think about it, I mean, if that's true, the koichot and energy that a person has are pretty vast and diverse. Whereas, if you think about the base of Medrash, it seems quite a limited arena to be able to express those koichos hanefesh.
So you can you can funnel them. Let's give one or two examples, then we'll see. There are many different activities. A basketball game, a spectator sport, Eva Reyes, whatever it is, that at the end of the day, the person feels a very high rush of enjoyment and excitement and enjoyment. That's what makes it pleasurable. So there are different drachen, but that makes it. If a person develops it, it can get that feel, that rush, so to speak, in Beis Medrash. It's just like L'Havdol Aleph Alfei Havdolos. There are many different drugs that have very different effects on a person. But for people who are into it, the bottom line is a rush of sorts. And the same person who can take a heroin, a cocaine, or something else, even though there are very different effects on a person, the tzad hashava is the thrill of it, the rush, or whatever it is you want to call it. Torah can have that quality. I guess let's just finish the thought I wanted to say before. You know, in Chassidish yeshivas, the attitude towards the outside world was tzaveil ha'balim, and sitting and learning is the only thing that's pure shemayim and it's good. And sitting and learning was seen as not having anything in common with the outside. You're not going to enjoy learning. You're not supposed to enjoy learning. You're supposed to do it because Hashem said to do it, and expresses an avos Hashem, whatever it is. The literature world emphasized the educational philosophy of the yeshiva is that the boys should, as much as possible, express their boyishness, their adolescence, in learning. The screaming, the yelling, the excitement, the putting down, the getting praised, the whole, so that it's a thrilling place to be. And it's, you know, yesh v'yesh, you know, but I'm saying that the idea is to sort of make the Yetzer Hara come round and pick up on that. That's really the mahalach that it's trying to tell us. And that was the, you know, in a yeshiva like Chevron, they encourage, I guess, a certain level of boyishness, adolescence, excitement, hacking, and so on and so forth, because you want to tap into the need for that. So you're right, there are many areas, you know, it's easy maybe to find a base medicine alternative for somebody who likes, I don't know, debating, but what about the guy who likes to play lacrosse? Is there anything based on measures like it? Well, obviously not particularly, but in terms of the excitement, the high, the vibrance, you know, the more abstract characteristics you could find. And that's and that's the point of so the delicate introduction of different nekudas of Yetzer Hara in terms of people's drives and so on, and finding the base medrash. Any questions? Anything else?
Yeah, Rabbi Yanky. I hear the mahalach. I think on a practical level, that kind of the anah that one experiences from Torah is quite a sophisticated level. It's right. Hard, you know, the anah that people have outside the base medrash are pretty gross. And
right.
When you kind of think about how a person, the level of refinement of self, and that could theoretically take years. I mean, if a child could take a person, let's say, in the extreme example you said, that person was, you know, he's tripping on drugs, and I take him to Beit Midrash, and he has to focus his mind. It's like, it will take years just to get his mind clear enough to even get close to experiencing anything.
Right. But so I'll tell you where it's more nogea. With younger boys, with boys who are in an age when, you know, it's very hard when you're older and you're rusty, and you can't really get into it in that way. So younger boys, and also, you don't need the instant conversion. When a person is struggling between going to Beis Medrash and doing something else, you're right, it's a much easier, more readily attained hanah, other stuff, but at least the person has a point of reference of extreme tainuk, every time to reinforce itself. And when somebody feels, I guess the word I could best use is exhilarated, after putting in a great Seder and coming up with something that somebody said, wow, that's good, and so on, then he has a chance in the struggle with the Yetzer Hara to at least, as opposed to the Chassidish kid, again, I'm just using the term generically, whose face-off is between the Yetzer Hara to have the thrills of life versus some adult-type voice telling him, no, thrills are not good for you, man is there to suffer, and suffering and sort of sitting and mindlessly over something is more, that's really what's good for you, and if God likes it, we'll give you Gan Eden. It's not easy, because the Yetzer Hara is on his side, not on your side. But if you're able to steal some of his thunder, then you're in a good shape. And that's sort of the mindset of the yeshivas. Like I said, Chevron Yeshiva encouraged a lot of this stuff because I read a description, there was a book somebody wrote in the 50s, Kent Estrol, there's an English boy, and he said, like, he stepped in Chevron Yeshiva, and it was the first time he saw people arguing during a Shir Klali vehemently. At some point he realized that many people arguing didn't know what they were talking about. But it was encouraged because it was encouraged that there would be a fire and everybody would get into it, and it would tap into some of the Yitzhak, what the Yitzhak has to offer it, and swing it into the Yitzhak Tov. Okay, so we'll hold it here, sort of middle of the paragraph, and yeah. Okay.
Okay, Shkach, thank you very much.
Shkach, thanks, gentlemen.
Sure. Call it to bye. Sure.